You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
While the president has sought to leverage infrastructure as the centerpiece of his economic policy since 2018 and now with greater urgency since the COVID pandemic, a new report commissioned by Business Leadership South Africa and conducted by consultancy Intellidex shows that infrastructure investment has fallen sharply over the past 6 years, from 20.3% of GDP in 2015 to 17.9% in 2019, far from the National Development Plan's target of 30% of GDP. But every crisis creates an opportunity, as the report points out, and South Africa now has the opportunity to calibrate its infrastructure procurement framework to unleash high volumes of investment. But change does come with risk, and a key component of this is through public-private partnerships. But the question is, what needs to happen to unlock these? To talk about what the suggested changes are, what risks need to be managed to unleash this potential, I'm joined now by Busi Mavuso, who is Head of Business Leadership South Africa, Dr. Stuart Theobald, Chairman of Intellidex, and hopefully a little later on, Dr. José Enzo Ramakgopa inside the presidency. Busi, kick us off. Why was this research commissioned now by BLSA?
Michael, thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation for us to come and discuss this very critical subject. So we are all agreed as South Africans that infrastructure investment is actually very central to our economic recovery agenda. And we all agree that by spending on infrastructure, we increase the capacity and the efficiency of the economy. And I think the infrastructure agenda has been so critical to this administration, so much so that the president, when he came into office, you know, even commissioned investment envoys, you know, to try and drive the investment agenda, you know, of the country. But with all these efforts, we are concerned that very little has moved. Actually, the report that we generated shows that we are sitting with serious infrastructure investment deficits. You know, we're currently spending about 2.5 billion rands a day on infrastructure. And according to the target that we have on the National Development Plan, as you have said, it's 30% of GDP, which means that we ought to be spending 4.1 billion rands per day. So we're clearly sitting with a deficit of 1.6 billion rands. And I think what we need to solve for as a country and what we need to answer is how do we get to those levels that are required so that we can start seeing, you know, a change in our economic trajectory and we can have an a successful economic recovery efforts, you know, as it went. So I think we deemed it fit to commission this study from that perspective, and we thought that it's important that business brings answers to the table, you know, and then look at how business and government can work together, you know, to actually deal with the issue of infrastructure investment.
And Stuart, a two-part question. Firstly, what does 4.1 billion rand a day look like? And secondly, if you break it down through the report, where are we seeing that decline? It does look largely to be through government and not the private sector at the moment.
So, yeah, Michael, you know, on the first question, 4.1 billion, and we need to be investing an extra 1.6 billion on average every day. Now, 1.6 billion would pay for a solar power plant to power 20,000 homes or a new university. So if you think of the scale of the challenge, we're talking about the equivalent of building a new university on average every single day that we have to add to our existing investment load. So you know, it really is a significant number. Now, to where the shortfall has been, if you look over the last 5 years, there's been a sharp overall decline. When you break that down, the private sector has been more or less flat. The record for private sector investment was back in 2008 before the global financial crisis. And since then, there was a sharp decline and it's trended sideways ever since. In the case of the public sector, though, since 2015, we've had a consistent decline. So state-owned enterprises are down about 30% in terms of percentage of GDP that they were contributing to infrastructure investment. And main budget spending by government is down about 18% over the last 5 years. So that's really where the decline in investment volumes has been happening.
And I suppose it also correlates with what we saw in the build-up to the 2010 World Cup, and then that collapse and fall-off post the global financial crisis. So we just haven't been able to pick it up again. If you to look at the conditions, Stuart, on the ground as to why we're not seeing the levels pick up to previous levels and start to trend upwards again. What are some of those the key findings in terms of the enabling conditions that appear to be lacking?
So it's a different story for the private sector compared to the public sector. Let me just say a few things about the private sector. We find, you know, globally economists agree that the private sector invests when they're at or near capacity utilization, right? So when you have factories and a certain level of capacity, you only invest when you're starting to reach the upper limits of that. Plus, you have to believe that there is demand coming, so it makes sense to invest to expand capacity. Those are the conditions in which the private sector invests at scale. So in 2008, we were in the peak of a bull run. You know, South African manufacturing was running at about 85% of capacity, and business confidence was very high, and that's what drove high levels of investment at that stage. Now, particularly after the COVID crisis, we're very far from capacity utilization, and business confidence is low. So quite difficult to expect the private sector to invest in those conditions. In the public sector, it's slightly different. We have two things happening, a financial problem and a skills capacity problem. So we, you know, in over the decade of state capture, there was clearly a lot of problems in infrastructure procurement, projects that were either corrupt or missed deadlines or overspent, you know, huge complex, you know, huge difficulties. And as a result, there was appropriately extensive effort by National Treasury to impose strong governance frameworks over infrastructure procurement. Now, the unintended consequence of that process is it has made infrastructure procurement much more complex. And at the same time, you've had a skills exodus out of the public sector. So these two factors are a pincer movement, which means municipalities upwards struggle to find the resources to drive infrastructure project development and delivery through to conclusion. And that's led to a big decline in investment by particularly sort of local government and provinces. Not so much about budget, but about the actual skills and capacity to deliver. Mm. Budget, though, is a major problem for SOEs because of balance sheet issues that have compromised their ability to raise debt in the debt markets to fund infrastructure investment.
And equally, that balance sheet issue now creates an opportunity to bring in the private sector. If that on-balance sheet model of delivery has now run its course, then it is time to start looking elsewhere for government. Boosie, from your vantage point of Business Leadership South Africa, would you agree with that assessment in terms of the blockages to private sector investment, firstly, and to also what's been happening in government that has seen this 30% decline in gross fixed capital formation over the last 5 years?
I definitely agree with that assessment, and I think, you know, the regulatory rigidity, you know, has been one of the reasons that have been cited by the report, especially in driving PPPs, because I think when you listen to government, Michael, the president has said so, the finance minister has said so, you know, there is a lot that they are actually putting on, you know, from a PPP perspective. You know, they also agree that the only way to actually shift things, you know, from an infrastructure spending perspective is going to be PPPs. But then it's amazing because with all the talk, you know, around PPPs, we have not looked at the reason why PPPs are not happening. You know, and the report clearly outlines, you know, the fact that there are regulatory rigidities, especially around Regulation 16 of the PFMA. You know, we know that the PFMA amendment has been cited as one of the things that the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan, you know, that we have as a country is going to be looking at. But if we are serious about, you know, the acceleration of infrastructure investment, I would wish that we could prioritize, you know, some of these things, especially the amendment of the PFMA, so that it can block some of these constraints that actually exist. You know, but on the other hand, the structural reforms that we've been talking about, Michael, you know, the issue of the spectrum, you know, the issue of energy, you know, the issue of, you know, finalizing the amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution, you would see that if the government were to get moving on some of these things, that in and of itself, you know, is actually going to open doors for infrastructure to happen, you know, because there's going to be a lot of investment spending that is going to flow, you know, from that opening up and from those amendments that business has been calling for, you know, for the past 3 years at least. So it's a function of, are we focusing on the right things as government? Yes, you can see the political will is there. You can see that the intention is there. You can see that the recognition is there, that infrastructure is actually going to be central to economic recovery. But we haven't spent enough time, you know, in terms of looking what are the blockages and why are things not moving, you know, and that is why we deemed it fit, you know, to look at maybe we should probably maybe start the conversation from there so that we can therefore direct our energies and efforts as a country towards the right things.
And if you want to unblock that quite clearly constipated infrastructure pipeline, you need to apply the right remedy, the right medication. And so it's important to understand where in the details, Stuart, the PPP framework is failing, is falling down at the moment. Because for a long time, South Africa has been hailed for having a really world-class PPP framework. In fact, the World Bank, as you reference in your report, has pointed to South Africa's framework as being world-leading. Why is it deficient and not fit for our purpose now?
So, yeah, it's a really good point. It is, you know, South Africa has really been at the vanguard of developing a PPP unit to oversee PPPs. But the good times of PPPs were really sort of pre-2010 when you look at the volumes of investment that were driven. And that was largely because of the political climate at the time and the fact you had a finance minister and a president who are quite committed to PPPs and therefore pressurizing the public sector to use them. But if you look at the framework itself, it's very complex. So it's a standardized framework. It doesn't matter if your project is something massive like the Gautrain or something very small like a small town's wastewater treatment plant. It's the same complex process, starting with viability studies and various points that you need to go through. And you see some of the PPPs can take a decade and longer to get through the approval cycle to be able to get shovels into the ground. So there's clearly major timing problems and how quickly you can apply the process. But it also doesn't make sense to have a standard approach that's, you know, blind to the risk or complexity of a project. You want something that is appropriately matched to a smaller, simpler project, results in a smaller, simpler process from a PPP point of view. You know, National Treasury is a regulator of PPPs. Its job is not to go out and create PPPs. And we've had that missing element. You know, what in government is driving the public sector to use PPPs as an appropriate mechanism? There isn't really any answer to that. The public sector has got two choices. They can do standardized, on-budget, normal procurement of infrastructure, or they can do a much more complex process of PPPs, which involves engaging with Treasury and can take many years. And it's no surprise that you end up with very little usage of PPPs, particularly in the last few years.
Busy, from your perspective, what does an ideal PPP framework look like for the private sector? Something that's sufficient to mitigate some of the political risk, some of the balance sheet risk as well. And I think here of models like the Gautrain. They have come in for some critique, saying that taxpayers are now funding shortfalls when they're not seeing the kinds of volumes of throughput because of lockdowns, because of the pandemic. What would an ideal environment look like for the private sector to engage in PPPs?
Well, I think the regulatory rigidity is definitely a key one, Michael, because I think if we are clear that we need to leverage the balance sheets of the private sector precisely because of the fiscal constraints that exist in the public sector and the fact that, you know, there is a serious balance sheet decay in the SOEs, then let's make it easy, you know, to do PPPs. You know, as Stuart said earlier on, there's only been one PPP that has been registered with the PPP unit since 2017. And I also think that the fact that there's only been 36 PPPs, you know, in total that have actually been commissioned in the country, I think that also says that there is a problem in as far as that is concerned, which is why I would have thought that by now, you know, with all the efforts, you know, and with all the focus that has actually been put on PPPs, government would have looked at why are they not, you know, happening at a rate that would like them to see happen. So I think government is also failing, I think probably maybe from an engagement with the private sector to really find out, you know, because if we agree that PPPs are actually going to be driven by the private sector from a balance sheet perspective, surely you need to understand, you know, from the owners of capital, what it is that they'd like to see and under which conditions that actually be happy to open up their balance sheet. So I think that has been a serious oversight from government in terms of not ensuring that they meaningfully bring in the private sector. But also from an SOE perspective, and we normally have this conversation as ESCOM, you know, SOEs seem to think that, and I think this is more an ideology of government than it is of SOEs, they seem to think that they need to be central to the recovery agenda of the country and to coming up with solutions that the SOEs are facing at the moment, you know, from an energy perspective, from a cost perspective, from a rail perspective. And I think that is another brilliant opportunity, you know, for PPPs to be fostered. But the thinking in government, you know, especially when it comes to SOEs and when it comes to some of the big projects that need to be undertaken by SOEs at the moment to deal with the issues of the network industries, you know, that are actually constraining growth and are actually impeding investment, that kind of thinking is just not there. So I think there needs to be a serious mindset shift, number one, of saying that government doesn't have to be central to the economic recovery agenda of South Africa, because the way they were, you know, post the global economic crisis in 2008, where the country was sitting with a budget surplus, that is not the case of that at the moment. So we can't want to actually undertake the infrastructure investment the way we did in 2008, because the capacity in the country, you know, the balance sheet, you know, and everything that goes with it doesn't exist. So this calls for a different type of engagement, you know, and a different way of looking at things, which is really not happening. And I think that is precisely what is highlighted in this paper, to say how do we still win, you know, but using different tactics and a different strategy than what we used in 2008.
And that is also why I do worry about the reliance on certain global economists. Mariano Mazzucato is one of them, who places the state back at the center and talks about the capacity of the state to innovate and still play this role. In the context of South Africa, where we have such capacity constraints, where we have such fiscal constraints, it's concerning to see that is the kind of policy advice, ideologically, that the President is leaning on at the moment. But I want to shift on. I don't want to get bogged down in the ideological debate. We've got a model, Stuart, in the REAP program that's often been held up as this blueprint for public-private partnerships. You know, 200 billion rands worth of private sector capital mobilized into the rollout of successful IPPs until Eskom stopped signing a couple of years ago, but we're looking to unblock that again. In your paper, you raise concerns about that particular model, which was almost a bespoke model for this particular crisis. Why can't we just replicate the REAP model throughout our infrastructure programs and use this as the basis to crowd in private sector investment?
Yeah, Michael, it's a very good question, because on one level, the REAP program, as you say, was very successful, mobilizing a lot of private sector investment and delivering a lot of energy capacity on time and on budget. I mean, it's a remarkable success. And it was done, however, in a kind of ad hoc framework. So it was a joint venture between the Department of Energy and National Treasury. DBSA kind of provided a secretariat. So it was really sort of made on the fly to deal with a very rapid response to an energy crisis as it began back then. You know, I think we must be cautious that ad hoc interventions, when they proliferate across government, lead to policy confusion and create a very difficult environment to manage, because we really need to ensure that we are allocating our capital effectively. We need to have a single consolidated view of where our risks are in new infrastructure projects. You know, I think that, to go back to the earlier point on the PPP framework, we should have a PPP framework that works, that is appropriate, that matches the kinds of infrastructure that we want to develop. It can create standardized solutions. For instance, you know, we need a lot of water infrastructure. You can create standardized forms of PPPs to do that, rather than coming up with ad hoc interventions. And we've seen it in other countries around the world, where as ad hoc things proliferate, you end up with some of them becoming big problems, because you don't have a consolidated governance framework for these institutions. You don't have a single mechanism to budget for them, to manage them. You know, South Africa had one great success point, but we shouldn't conclude from that model can easily apply to other situations. In fact, I'd suggest that the success was despite the model, not because of it, that it took a force of personality and a lot of political will to get the REAP program to work. That the ad hoc kind of framework that was used institutionally to drive it was probably its biggest weakness.
That is an interesting observation. And Busi, There's a couple of interesting insights in that. One, if you actually get the right people around the table and the right force of will, you can unlock significant quantums of private sector capital to invest into network industries, energy, this one for example. But if we don't get the frameworks right, it's very difficult to replicate that kind of model and see it as a sustainable model going forward. What role do you see business playing in all of this in terms of approaching government and saying, you know, here's the paper that we've produced, these are the deficits, they've been known for a while, we need to start moving on these, surely. What kinds of conversations are you having with government on the back of this kind of research?
You know, Michael, I must say that whatever is not happening in the country, especially where clearly there is a role for the private sector to play and where the skills and capacity only exist in the private sector, if it's not happening at the moment, it is definitely not from a lack of trying from the private sector. There are a lot of engagements that are being held by the private sector with the different departments, different ministries, the president himself, engagement at NEDLAC, and in all the various platforms, you know, including, you know, being a participant, you know, in the very infrastructure discussion and being part of the committees that have actually been set up to try and deal with the issue of infrastructure. So we are clearly lacking political will at the moment. So the government can't sit where they are saying and say that the private sector is not offered or they're not engaged with us. You know, I think the blockage at the moment is really the toxicity, the toxic nature of the politics within the ANC. You know, the blockage is really, you know, the fact that, you know, you're sitting with a government that is at war with itself, you know, so the focus may not be, you know, clearly on driving some of the things that we need to drive from an economic perspective, but really, you know, the political infighting is really diverting their attention, you know, to some of the things that they actually need to be focusing on. And I must say that, you know, for those that are actually trying to drive things in the right direction, you know, then there's probably maybe, you know, an undermining of their efforts from, you know, some sectors of government or from some factions, you know, of the ANC. And I think we really have to deal with that reality. Interestingly, this morning, we're having that precise conversation as BUSA, you know, to say, you know, in spite of all our efforts, why are things not moving? You know, what is it that we need to do differently? You know, but it becomes difficult, Michael, to win a fight if you are the only one in the boxing ring. You know, government at the moment is not in the boxing ring, not in the manner and in the way that they ought to be, you know, precisely because of, you know, the agenda, you know, that is actually occupying them from an ANC perspective. And I think that is really at the heart of the problem. And they really need to look at how are they actually going to deal with this so that they can allow the country to progress and economic recovery to take place.
And it speaks to exactly what Deputy Finance Minister Dondo Magajani was saying recently when he says there are vested interests that are blocking progress on certain key issues. If you have a contract that is now under threat because you're going to go the PPP route and it doesn't withstand the scrutiny of getting value for money and all of those good things that PPP should deliver, it's unsurprising that we are seeing this contestation and this fight back from those inside government and inside the ruling party. Just Stuart, we've got 2 minutes to go. What would you like to see happen from here for government to take these insights and to manifest them into something that sees that pipeline of infrastructure unblocked?
I think, you know, I think the report shows that there's no silver bullet. There's no simple answer. We've actually got to fix a lot of things all over government and in the relationship between government and the private sector to get infrastructure to work. So I hope that the conversation can advance to looking at those in more detail and identifying them and acknowledging that we need to do something about them. Because I think the conversation has been heavily biased towards, you know, certain institutional interventions thinking that that'll resolve all of the problems. It won't. Mm. It's complex and we need to deal with them one by one. But I think really importantly, the conversation needs to improve between the private sector and the public sector to say, okay, we recognize that between the two of us, we can really do good things. What is the right framework that's going to allow that to become a reality? How do we get the private sector to bring capacity and innovation and balance sheet while the public sector brings the, you know, being a custodian of the public good, being concerned and ensuring that we make investment decisions that fit the wider democratic agenda that the government has? And are we delivering value for money to the population when we make those decisions? If we can bring those together and really start working on building a PPP framework that creates a major pipeline of new infrastructure of private and public sector working together. You know, I think that would be the ideal outcome. We want to start a journey towards that.
I will certainly be putting that to Dr. José Ntsaramakgopa, who heads up infrastructure inside the presidency, when he joins us next time around. Thank you very much, Stuart Theobald, Chairman of Intellidex, and Busi Mabuso, CEO of Business and Leadership South Africa, talking about an excellently researched document on infrastructure and how we, to Stuart's earlier point, catalyze this conversation between the public and the private sector to get infrastructure going again, to get the South African economy going again, and ultimately to ensure that we start building a far more prosperous and resilient future.